state of West Virginia. And we're going to be speaking, I think, one way or another, with Dr. Judy Wood. Dr. Judy Wood is a former professor of mechanical engineering at Clemson. She has degrees in engineering mechanics, which is also applied physics, and in material engineering science. And let me read from her site. Again, drjudywood.com, drjudywood.com. And it says she has interest in experimental stress analysis, structural mechanics, optical methods, deformation analysis, and materials characterization of biomaterials and composite materials. She's a member of the Society for Experimental Mechanics, co-founded SEM's Biological Systems and Materials Division, and currently serves on the SEM Composite Materials Technical Division. So our rather no-tech phone patch is not working. So I'm going to hear that.
Oh, wow.
I don't know. We're going to try this method. I kind of doubt it'll work, but maybe it will try something here. It's a little sketchy. Okay, Dr. Wood, can you hear me good?
Yes, can you hear me?
Hear me all right. Let's see. Let me see if I can test, see if this is coming across. Okay, so where are you calling from yet?
Clemson, South Carolina.
Okay. And, you know, let me see here. I don't know how I have to test it. Wow, a good way to test it, see if it's working. It sounds like it's working from my my side. I guess we can just go ahead and...
Andrew emailed me and said that he has a 50 hertz buzz.
A 50 hertz buzz.
Yeah, I don't
know what that. Yeah, that sounds like us at 50 hertz buzz, huh? Well, how are we doing so far? You think we could have them talk about your site?
We can try.
Okay. I think we'll see what works. Okay. All right. Well, again, the site, drjudywood.com. And let's see now. When did you first put this site up? What was your interest in getting it going?
Well, I first started putting it up several years ago. It was on the Jane Doe site. I just took out a freebie site. And I had some pictures I wanted to share with somebody.
Okay.
And I had some narration I put in an email. And that was a little bit too difficult for that person to read the text and then go find the picture and then come back and read the text. And he wanted them all in one place, so I took out a freebie site and put it up there.
Okay.
And then it started growing from there.
Well, the one thing, to maybe jump around, I think it was important that you stressed the data that you collected, and I don't quite know how to even start with it. One thing that really impressed me were the vehicles that were burned in Lower Manhattan, and can you describe some of these things? What's different than, say, a normal toasted car or a fire engine?
What I mean by toasted is using that in terms of it's toast, it's history. It's total on their insurance policy, and it goes anywhere from the car being there having like missing an engine block to the car not being there at all. It's pretty strange, the unusual pattern. And there have been news videos that show cars spontaneously combusting, and there's been eyewitness testimony about that.
Uh-huh.
Versus, turning the fire as the person runs past it. On the webpage, if you want to go to the toast car page,
yes.
There's a row of pictures. The first row of pictures is about the fourth picture over in that box is Toasted Car Page 5.
Uh-huh.
If you click on that picture, it's a police car, but some people can't even tell it's a police car. That's over on the East River.
And how far away is that from the WTC complex?
A mile.
A mile.
Yeah, mile to mile. This is a little bit north of there, directly east.
How far are those cities?
It's kind of in the area.
It was around the area.
I just wanted to know.
Yeah, now, actually, what I started to see, the thing is, everything's all crossed up here, but I actually have going the, I believe it's Diane Sawyer, and it's, maybe I could just play that for, how long is that, a few minutes? The interview of Diane Sawyer with the fireman?
Yeah.
Yeah, let me,
just 1 minute.
Yeah, let me just play that. I think I can get that going. Everything's all crossed around on different computers, but, let's see. It looks like it loaded well. Let me get this back going again. Okay, let's see what happens here. I don't know.
Okay, someone just emailed me.
I got John Gale in here with me. We've been dividing up all the duties here, and he's been down to the scene. And also, J.D. Halpern, who said he's just a volunteer, came in from California and was around the area. I just wanted to know how much fire is there. You said you were just at ground zero. How much fire is left?
Well, the building 7, there was no fire there whatsoever, but there was one truck putting water on the building, but it's collapsed completely. And then the other building that there were some flames still coming up was in World Trade Center 1, but not a lot.
And you said you saw melted tour buses, melted cars?
The cars that were right down there was just unbelievable. They were twisted and melted into nothing. The debris is just unbelievable. And then you can see fire trucks and police vehicles that were down there early that all their windows, the windshield are completely blown out from, must have been from when debris dropped.
Yeah, well, now, that's a little interesting. You kept saying unbelievable. I think that is kind of a reaction that you get, you know, when you see the remnants of these vehicles, because it doesn't quite look very like what we're used to, at least.
There's something else you'll notice he said there at the end, that all the windows are blown out of the fire trucks. It must have been from falling debris, you know. He didn't know why, but he needed an answer.
Yeah.
I think that's human reaction, and... As we know, 9/11 was a PSYOP event, a serious PSYOP event, and we were all PSYOPs in one form or another.
Yes, and I think really across the board, like you referenced when we were talking earlier today off the air, that you sort of second, third hand, you met someone, or someone was talking to someone, I guess just sort of wet West Virginia, sort of kind of, you know, back with West Virginia as most of it is, and they were just right, kind of, right on this page, weren't they? I mean,
the different people who are, you know, the different things interest them, and that's the beauty of humanity, is we are all different. The toasted cars all interested me, as well as the way that the towers went poof. But there's other, you know, anomalies, like the airplane issue. But what I was referring to about the PSYOP is that humans need an explanation for weird things. They're desperate for it. So if you're going to pull such a job as 9/11, there are going to be questions. You have the answers right there ready for them.
Yes, I think that's what it is. Like, different people for different reasons didn't believe the story from the beginning, myself saying the no interception issue, you can go on and on. So in a sense, it's like we've been watching something, say like we're watching a performance from, you know, a magician, the great Splendini is doing something, and we know it's a scam, but we're not given the inside information as to how the trick is done. So what we have is the data, what's left on that day, and what we can say about it to try to figure it out. And one interesting thing that you point out is that generally when buildings are brought down, when they are collapsed, that 12% of the volume remains after the collapse. In terms of the towers, that would have been about, say, 14 to 15 floors. Now, we did have that in Building 7. We had about 4 or 5 floors of debris. But in terms of the towers, wasn't it really just about the lobby was there with some debris stacked in it? And also, what's interesting very much to me is that the lower levels were intact.
Yeah, Roadrunner survived.
Okay.
It was in the Warner Brothers store down there, a big life-size statue.
Really?
Of Roadrunner, and let's see, Bugs Bunny and Foghorn Leghorn. You know, the three of them are sitting in a museum kind of, you know, preservation place.
Really?
But I think there's also this rumor that went out about the firemen stealing jeans from the Gap.
Oh, really?
Now, what does that tell you? I mean, the fact that they could make up such a rumor is saying that the store was intact.
Uh-huh.
fall.
Yeah, I did see some pictures somewhere in here from the lower levels. Would there be any other little clips? Like the previous one Diane Sawyer interviewed, and maybe we could play? Because we, generally I can't do that, but anything we could stream from your site think might be of interest? Or?
Yeah, there's a variety of different issues. There's a Toasted Car series, and there's also a More Toasted Car page, which is additional ones which show the whole map of where each one is, which might be of interest. Noticing strange things like missing door handles, missing engine blocks.
Yes.
Missing half of a vehicle.
Yeah, I'm trying to find some of those pictures. It was definitely very bizarre to see something, say, like the safety harnesses or the safety belts are still intact. Okay, like here's a picture of a police car. The back end of it is fine. Now, this is on a bridge. You said this is over the East River?
No, this is right here, the Brooklyn Bridge, but it's underneath SDR Drive.
Okay.
That's the East River we see out the window on the other side of the vehicle. There's some other pictures of this police car right below there where you can see in front of the police car there's a vehicle covered with dust. So we kind of think it was there to begin with, but they didn't haul it over there and put dust on it. But there's random weird things that happen to these vehicles.
Yes, and then you have a map, like an aerial view. The difference between where the police car is and the WTC, it shows it like about a mile, half a mile or more apart. And then so there's like 1,400 or some of these toasted cars.
There was enough left that they could count it as a vehicle.
Yeah, and it's just so bizarre. Okay, one picture says blistered car, FDR Drive, unburned upholstery and unburned plastic window molding, but then. The outside is completely toasted.
Yeah. And there's one below that. That was figure 67, currently numbered 67 that you were referring to. And figure 68, you'll notice the back end of that police car has a new wax job.
Exactly. Wow, that is bizarre. The fire damage stops at the passenger door, the front passenger door. I mean, the front door is toasted, the back door is not, and the back of the car looks pristine, and the front of it is just completely gone. I mean, that's bizarre.
And then there's the inside. There's a close-up picture further down the page of the inside of that police car, where it's rusted inside.
Yeah.
And this is under, the overpass, and it's inside, under a roof. Why is it rusty in there?
And that is kind of a recurring theme, this rust.
Instant rust.
And now, did you see people, you have pictures of people were covered. Now, I'm not sure if this is right, but I was looking at a class, one angle this morning, and it seemed like there was a little more of a pyroclastic flow type of thing from the class, the towers, compared to a normal demolition. I don't know if that's really the case or not, but it...
Go to my homepage. DrJudyWood.com, that's DrJudyWood.com, and those little pictures you can click on to get the other pages,
Says
second row, there's the dirt series.
Okay, where it just says dirt?
Yes, it says molecular dissociation from dust to dirt.
Oh, okay.
And click on the first one, it says Alka-Seltzer, dirt one.
Okay. It is an amazing amount of powder, like it's a flower cloud.
Now, that'll take a minute to fill in, but if you go down, my phone is in the bottom up, so that might be...
Okay, it's a little slow there.
Yep, it does.
But, wow, okay, what... It's not showing it on my...
Hold on, the figures 38, 39, 40, 41. It's pretty near the bottom. Might be easier to just go to the very bottom and then scroll up. Figures 38, 39, 40, and 41 on the dirt one page.
Now,
I call that the
Alka-Seltzer
page.
Yeah.
And the picture of, and we've seen many of these pictures in, on the newspaper shortly after 9/11, where they strike people running down the road with a big wall of cloud chasing them.
Uh-huh.
It's not right.
After that cloud rolled past, we didn't have toasted bodies.
Uh-huh.
The street may have cooked bodies.
Yeah, that's what would normally happen in a pyroclastic flow. It'd be superheated steam, I guess, is what I'm... It just kind of looked like it, though, but, I didn't quite get to that, but I'm at the one page where it has a 77 figure. 77 shows the mail truck that's parked across from Building 7 that's burned.
Well, which page are you on?
I'm on the toasted cars. I couldn't get the cloud.
So, from the toasted car page, let me see if I can get to there. Right there. I'm familiar with that mail truck. It's pretty sad looking.
Yeah, it's, now this is building, next to Building 7, which is still intact.
Oh, yeah, I call that the swamp. That's West Broadway, and in that Diane Sawyer video, that's what they're referring to, the tour bus.
Okay.
That's on that street.
Hmm.
So this is Figure 77 you're talking about?
Yeah. Oh, now see, I don't know where I'm at to the fire truck, badly damaged fire truck, and the engine is gone. It's, this is a pretty bizarre picture. The bottom of the tire has turned to goo. It's just so surreal. I mean, it's just completely, you know, it just doesn't look natural. I mean, if this fire truck had been placed right next to, say, a burning barn, you know, some horrible fire that burned it all the way down, certainly the truck would burn, but it wouldn't look like this. This thing is, you almost have to see it to understand it. It's like it was kind of made out of putty or something. And it just...
Now, on top of the toasted car page, there's a little shortcut link. You click on other anomalies. I think that takes you to that section you're referring to.
Uh-huh.
The other anomalies. And there's more pictures. Well, there's three of them where you can tell that there's no engine block left.
Hmm.
And there's a hazmat truck parked out in front of Building 6. And the interest, this is the figure hazmat. Squad 18, I think.
Yeah.
There's no engine block there. And it's got some funny burn marks on the side of the side panel.
Now I'm down figure 66. It shows some rather intense vehicle fires. Right next to one, there's an awful lot of paper, and you're asking, why doesn't the paper burn?
You're in the burning car section.
Yeah. Okay. And it shows a lot about the fire trucks that are having this asymmetrical type of damage, weird type of, some's burned, some's not.
It's interesting, but these fire trucks, the windows are missing, but nothing else is damaged. Now, figure 66, P, Q, R... There's a missing window section. Then the first one in that section that I put there because it's tall.
Uh-huh.
You have all your vehicles on fire and you have paper in the trees and in the streets. You know, why isn't the paper burning? Why did the vehicles catch... How could the vehicles catch fire without the paper catching fire?
And then we're now I'm looking at some of the sites. The building 2 came down, and there aren't any fires. So what can you say about the lack of debris? I mean, how can we impress that this is just not normal? I mean, we should have had a whole lot more debris in it. Because like the pancake theory, I've always tried to be funny. You know, the pancake theory. I'm not getting any pancakes. I need at least one. Well, you know, we should have had 14 floors of pancakes, and we didn't get any.
Are you in the toasted car page?
Yeah, I'm still with that.
Yeah, you can go to the section that says toasted parking lot. Again, there's a quick link at the top. If you click on toasted parking lot, it takes you down to that area. And you can see after Tower 2, which was the first tower to go away, after it went poof and the dust is starting to clear, the parking lot is not on fire. And then Tower 1 goes poof and the parking lot is on fire. So we know now that both towers have gone away. And you look, and you just see white in the street. From paper and dust. Where is the building?
Mm-hmm.
And, figure, street 9B, 9A. 9A, if you click on that picture, you'll get a bigger version. That one is, astonishing. This is the picture right after the people just come out of their hiding places and they're seeing, you know, what happened. They're looking like, oh my gosh, where's the building?
Mm-hmm.
Where'd it go?
Yeah.
And you see they're like an ankle deep paper.
Uh-huh.
Where's the material from that building? You know, see, you should see a 110-story building right in front of you here.
Exactly. And I do remember those comments made about that from the beginning, but, you know, it's like, if you don't really look at it, and that's what a lot of the point of this is. I mean, hopefully maybe this is translating on the radio a little bit, but it's like looking at the data that's there. I mean, and what are you going to conclude from that data? You know, I mean, we're supposed to believe in the pancake theory, but we don't have the pancakes. I don't want to get into too much, but, you know, and then these burned cars, which I've never really come across before. And also, in the past year or so, before that, I hadn't seen the burning metal coming out of Building 2. But, you know, and of course, the controlled demolition, people say, of course, well, that's thermite or thermate or whatever. But, you know, Dr. Fetzer pointed out the last time we spoke that that was more than likely lead from a large amount of batteries that the Fuji Bank had.
But that's just still guesswork.
Yeah, exactly. Well, because what are you going to... You don't know for sure. We're trying to figure out this illusion. We're trying to figure out something here, and it's like, what's the best conclusion? Do you have any more videos? Maybe we have the Diane Sawyer one is on this.
There's some videos on the Dirt Series. On the bottom of the Touching Car page?
Yeah, that's where I'm at now.
I guess, you gotta go back to the main page. It doesn't have a quick link there because that's an older series. But, if you go back to the main page, and go to the Molecular Dissociation from Dust to Dirt.
Yeah, now that's an interesting concept. You're saying dissociation. What do you mean?
Then it comes apart.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, here's an interesting point. Steel doesn't rust all that fast.
Yes, exactly.
Sure does. You have an iron skillet, and you scrub it and put it in your sink and leave a little water in it.
Uh-huh.
Okay, it's bright orange the next morning. It's bright orange shortly, I don't know, probably an hour or two.
Mm-hmm.
It rusts very fast. Pure iron does. So how has come steel beams in place are rusting as fast as iron?
Mm-hmm.
Uniformly, can what's the difference between steel and iron? Steel has various other ingredients in it, like carbon and some small elements, sometimes nickel and other things. There's, of course, stainless steel, but just regular steel has enough of these other ingredients that enhance the strength of it and the properties. And the steel is more rust resistant. You have water pipes out of steel. And so what would cause that steel to act like iron? It's taking the elements apart and leaving pure iron and detaching the carbon and the other parts. That's molecular dissociation. The molecules are being taken apart for some reason.
Mm-hmm. Now, you talk about these Star Wars directed energy weapons. What do we know about those? I mean, all I heard, I can remember some time ago in the mainstream, there was something reported about some type of army laser. They had some type of wonderful laser that they didn't, they just admitted they had. That's about it. But you do have a section. So what can you tell us about that? I mean, you say they are secrets, so it's not too much research we can do.
I think it's more important to understand the data.
Yes.
If you understand the data, the answer comes right to you.
Okay.
And instead of, feeling like you're just speculating, guessing about wild things, once you look at the data, there's no denying something weird happens.
Uh-huh.
But otherwise, if you're jumping to the answer...
Yes.
You might not know how you got there, and then you're going to start questioning it when the opposition tells you to question it, and you go around in circles.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I put together these various theories, so you can just see what's going on. You know, is this a fire? Do normal fires, cause the building to turn to nothing, to float up into the upper atmosphere? Mm-hmm. And there are photos that show that the stuff went up. And also the dirt. Can you get to the dirt, series?
I've lost her. I'm trying to get it back. No, but, well, yeah, this is interesting because, you know, for some time in the past 6 years, you know, the research, there's quite a huge community out there from all different walks of life, but the sum total of the research that's been done has demonstrated without a doubt that in every significant respect that the government has been feeding us a story that is completely false, and, you know, sometimes just hysterically and outrageously so. Okay, so we can get past that. You know, I think, but just, and the thing is, focusing on the data, what is the data that we have left behind? Like, the obvious thing with the Pentagon, I mean, that's almost passé at this point. You know, if 757 is going to wreck, there's going to be at least some wreckage. But also, not even that, like, aerodynamically, you know, the story is impossible. Logically, rationally, the story is impossible. We've had interviews from pilots that actually fly those very same planes that said if they were tasked with that job, let's say, you know, you fly to the end of Pennsylvania, turn off all your navigation equipment, don't communicate with air traffic control or any type of GPS or anything. First of all, they couldn't find New York City, let alone a tiny target. Those are people whose job it is to fly those things. So what you speak of somebody that can't fly a Cessna, okay, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Okay.
Well, here's an interesting, if you want to talk about the plane issue, which to me immediately is we hear about four hijacked airplanes, all, you know, within an hour of each other.
Yeah.
And my age is still here. I remember in the early 70s, it seemed like we had a hijacking a week.
Okay.
And, you know, I must be exaggerating that in my memory. I went back and looked it up, and it is just about the hijacking week at the peak of time. And then in the mid-70s, maybe 1974, it abruptly leveled off. We had, you know, a few here and there, and it just abruptly stopped. The hijackings were so common that my favorite one, I remember, is a guy who wanted to fly to Minneapolis, and their own flights were booked. So he got a seat on a plane going to L.A. or San Francisco, and then partway through the flight, he hijacked it to Minneapolis.
Okay.
In other words, it wasn't political or anything. He just wanted to get there.
Uh-huh.
And hijackings were so easy and so common. And then they, abruptly stopped when we heard about them, and we forgot about them.
Mm-hmm.
And so something happened in that time period. And I looked back recently, and you know how many hijackings there were? In the 10 years prior to 9/11?
I guess there were none, right?
Zero.
Yeah.
And, you have to wonder, how can you have zero and all of a sudden have four? Didn't the people have thought of it before? And it turns out that Boeing 757 and 767 became standard disparate equipment for U.S. delivery, a lockout feature.
Mm-hmm.
And other planes, older planes, were getting retrofitted with this equipment, where the pilot types in a code and he no longer flies the plane.
Yeah.
It's either flown by, you know, GPS, with maybe a subroutine as to where to land it, or flown by the tower. But the pilot no longer has control, so you can't hijack the plane. It flies itself on autopilot once it has the autopilot. Pilot types in the hijack code. Now, how do we have 404? Because we've already had a couple. You know, pilots will be on alert to type in that code. So it doesn't make sense.
Hmm. Oh, yeah, that was initially certainly why I couldn't believe it. You know, you say, I mean, every aspect of that story is not possible. I mean, we've already gone over that. You know, I mean, you don't, what was the one the pilot said that you can't get a man to give up his TV remote, much less the controls of his Boeing. I mean, physically, that would be a very difficult thing for the two military-trained pilots to climb out of the cockpit. You basically wear the cockpit, you know? I mean, it's not like, you know, oh, yeah, just come here and have my Boeing. You know, I've lost my internet altogether, I guess it looks like. But at least we got a couple things out of there. But, so where do you think, now, you say you're still finding out some things here and there. What's the latest thing that you might be working on to think be of interest?
Looking at the transcripts of the interviews they did of the emergency workers right after 9/11, and looking for what they saw and heard, and it's amazing. The evidence is right out there.
Uh-huh.
You know, we're told airplanes hit the towers,
uh-huh.
And like that Diane Sawyer video, where the guy is trying to think of why the, all the windows were blown out of the fire truck. It must be because of debris landing on them. But the fire trucks don't have dust in them. They just have, are missing their windows. Nothing else. Nothing, apparently, hit them. There's nothing on the ground around that bounced off the fire truck. The fire trucks just all suddenly lost their windows. And, you know, paper work and so forth is still in the vehicle. So, and there's a, another video I have on page 4 on the dirt series that I focus on psychological aspect. There's this doctor at Ground Zero who left the hospital because they didn't bring in any emergency people. They weren't bringing in any people. So he came down to the site to see what's going on. Ground Zero, and the reporter, Scott Sully, asked him, where are all the bodies? And the doctor just shocked. He's struggling for an answer. Yeah, where are the bodies? And then he starts going into this engineering description. You can see he's just grasping for a sense of reality. He needs to have things explained. You know, his explanation didn't make a lot of sense. You know, it had the explosion of a nuclear bomb just by collapsing it on itself, because that's what he was told, that it collapsed on itself. And he's trying to explain away. So people are trying to explain things away. They're very open to suggestions.
Mm-hmm.
And if someone's told a plane hit the building, oh, okay, it must have been, you know, they believe it, they move on, they don't have time to think, and, you know, while their adrenaline is flowing. And so these emergency workers, many of them, talk about, you know, all right, they get the call, they drive down there, right when they park, they hear a big boom, and they look up, and they see a hole in the tower. None of them said, they heard a crash, you know, a kamikaze type thing.
Yeah.
When people hear a low-flying airplane, they want to see where they're going to crash. They're watching for it, or they're diving for the pavement, hoping it doesn't hit them. And airports, the baggage handlers wear earmuffs because jets are loud. So why would anyone hear the planes hitting the towers? The first thing they notice is they hear an explosion, and they think it's a secondary explosion. If it were an airplane hitting the tower, you wouldn't assume it's a secondary explosion. Because you would have heard the airplane sound probably louder than the hit of the tower.
Wow.
Yes. Another thing is, you know, Americans have seen too much Roadrunner cartoons.
Okay. You're saying that there might have been a little bit too much damage on the building from the way, certainly say the engines, I mean, that's major steel indestructible landing gear. Is there a way?
Like the Roadrunner, when the coyote, you know, runs into a wall and goes to the other side, even his ears, big little cutout.
Uh-huh.
He cut a cutout just the shape of his body.
Yeah.
The airplane is not going to do that in real life. The wings of an airplane, you fly, you don't jump up and down on them.
No.
Actually, for maintenance purposes, these big Boeings have, you know, no step here decals, no step on the wings to remind the workers, don't step here, you're going to break the wing. You can't handle your body weight.
I mean, they are relatively fragile in normal flight. A plane like that, you'll see they do kind of wave a little bit up and down.
So, how are you going to get this, you know, thin aluminum? Planes aren't over-designed. They're not stronger, you know, than they need to be.
Uh-huh.
They're light and efficient. They're not expected to have any collisions in the sky because nobody's going to survive anyway.
Exactly.
You make it so that the wings can hold the plane up.
They're just made to bounce off the air, that's it.
And the air is alone on it.
Huh.
And so to have this, you know, the very tip of the wing, 5 inches tall,
mm-hmm.
you know, probably tons of inch thick aluminum skin out there, to have that sliced through steel columns of the building.
Yeah, that's certainly not possible. I mean, the aluminum, the structure of that is just not even anywhere near capable of doing that to the steel, especially the massive steel in these towers. So,
that without slowing down a bit.
Mm-hmm.
has went back. You know, and if they're not, oh yeah, that nose is, you know, plastic nose cones, they don't drill through steel.
No. I mean, that was some of the silliness about what they said about the Pentagon. You know, you have three walls totaling 9 feet of steel reinforced concrete, and there's the exit wound that's this nice kind of round hole. And again, all along, I like, watched a little bit of the Hushman thing. Where he really shines is just these pictures inside the Pentagon. There's no aircraft wreckage. I mean, you know, it's just.
Where'd it go? Is it right?
Emperor's New Clothes story. Referencing that, I guess it's pretty pretty apropos. I mean, so you know, what do we do? Huh? Talk about the data. Wow.
Yeah, look and see and think for yourself. There's a reason why we got into this predicament.
Mm-hmm.
It's this appeal of authority. You know, believe your TV says whatever it tells. And remember the War on the Walls?
Yes.
For hearing of it, at least.
Uh-huh.
People heard this fake show on the radio about aliens from outer space invading the planet.
Yeah, they believed it.
Yeah, and a lot of them took it seriously.
Uh-huh. That's basically what we have here, I guess, in some sense.
And it was just a more updated, high-tech version of it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I thought on that day, because things weren't making sense. And I thought, okay, this is, they're playing a trick on us.
Uh-huh.
And my parents lived near the Pentagon, so I called my mom up and asked her to look out the window to see if there's any fighter jets overhead. Because that's my way of telling the difference. If there's fighter jets overhead, maybe it's real.
Yeah.
If there's no fighter jets overhead, it's all a hoax.
Exactly.
So that was, you know, just in the heat of the moment where I was thinking. But
yeah.
It's important for people to look at the data anew themselves rather than. Like the molten metal story that gets repeated over
exactly.
And over again.
And I've heard of that. I'm just assuming, oh, you know, it must be true. You know, but now you have some pictures there somewhere in the site. Actually, things that were painted orange. Was it they were digging out rubble that was literally painted orange? Or was that the case, or what?
No, there's some pictures on the dirt pages that show, you know, molecular dissociation of steel. Is turning to dust and floating upward. And it's orange, like rust.
Uh-huh.
It's impressive. And there's also some other, I've assigned new terms to the phenomenon, just so I don't ask myself, like my observation, if you call it smoke, you're going to think fire.
Uh-huh.
I call it fumes. I don't know if it's chemical fumes or, you know, thermal fumes. Fumes, that's just generic. And fuzz balls and fuzzy wads. I decide these two specific characteristics I've noticed. And you start noticing more and more as you start looking and identifying these traits, and none of these traits are normal.
Mm-hmm.
Like you have beams that start falling off the building, and they're trailing dust, and they never hit the ground. Yeah, they disintegrate, they melt like a popsicle.
And actually where that's really mostly visible is in the South Tower, the top 30 floors, they start to lean way over. Now, in the Ho Chi Minh video, I saw that a little bit today. Now, of course, he put that out 4.5 years ago, and he's saying that it broke off and it hit the buildings below, but if you just look at it, it pivots way over and it turns to dust. I mean, that's what's on the video. It's not some crazy wild-eyed guy with college, you know, radio program going crazy. That's what's on the video. The top 30 floors pivot way over, and then they turn to dust.
And the building below that, before it disappeared.
Exactly.
And the mall, one story below that, the ground floor, was intact.
And that's really one thing that really impressed me lately is you know, just looking at that, the lack of debris that you have, you've got the lobby, and especially the lower floors, those lower floors being intact. You see the pictures of these people walking around down in there. I mean, that's just, you know, I hadn't seen those before. And, you know, these vehicles that are burned in such a bizarre way. I mean, what else can you say? What you say? Just look at that and, you know, make up your own mind. What do you think did it?
Why were they hauling in dirt, truckloads and truckloads of dirt, and dumping it on ground zero? I said the pile got taller for quite a few weeks. Because at first it wasn't any dirt, then the dirt started, you know, the piles started looking taller because it was filled in with dirt. Now, why would they bring dirt in? Aren't they supposed to be looking for survivors?
Yeah, I don't know. There's been different little side stories that maybe they were for distraction or not. I mean, there's a story about, you know, they were looking for the gold, and they found the gold, and then as soon as they did that, then they hauled all the debris away to the dump. You know, I don't know.
Did they have to get the fuming out of it? We heard about this, molten metal and all. Well, as soon as you put a fire hose on molten metal, what are you going to have?
Exactly, a lot of steam. And especially, I can't imagine, you know, if the story of it lasting for a month or 5 weeks, I mean, that's crazy. I mean, you pour molten metal on the ground, I mean, it'll stay molten for a while, but not that long, so not for a month. You know?
And that was pouring, you know, water on, having pulled the water standing still, yeah. Not even boiling.
Who was reporting that? I mean, where did that start, you know, the molten metal?
It was planted as part of the psychological operation of the cover-up.
Uh-huh.
Because if you have molecular dissociation, you have this fuming. You know, the metal is just coming apart and floating up. It's like turning into a gas almost. I call it dustification, so I don't have to determine exactly the process. But very, very fine particles, you know, not micron size. And you know, people are breathing it too. But if you have that, people are going to see it. You need an explanation. Now they say it's smoke from a fire.
Uh-huh.
So why do you have a fire? Well, to prove you have a fire, you have all this molten metal. And so it's all this horrendous heat. And a temperature of, you know, thousands of degrees on the pile. Well, you know, if your oven is even 300 degrees, you can't stick your hand in it.
Yeah, exactly.
How's it going to be having workers walking around in the pile? And dogs without boots on.
Uh-huh.
But they also needed that story of molten metal because the workers' boots disintegrated in just a couple of hours. And they were told they were melting because of the temperatures. Mm-hmm. Okay, see, humans need an answer. They got an answer now, they move on. They don't stop to think if that's reasonable because someone in authority told them that answer. But if you think about it, if you have molecular dissociation of the steel, and you have steel-toed work boots, then the material in those boots is going to start coming apart, too.
Uh-huh.
It's not temperature.
I mean, maybe some kind of very loose analogy might be, you know, a microwave oven, you put some paper in there, it's going to last a while, but if you put a piece of metal right away, it's going to be sparking and arcing.
Right. Tin foil does something different than paper.
Uh-huh.
It does something else, too. They each get affected differently.
Well, let's see. We started off, of course, the phone thing. I can't believe I guess it's working. And I lost the internet. But, yeah, try to go to Dr. Wood's site, drjudywood.com. And I don't know, maybe, like, I had to have the internet at first, and then I lost it. Maybe, I don't know if I could, tomorrow, if I could get it, I could maybe go in. And you do have some interviews on other radio programs, don't you? And,
on those pages, you can listen to them while you're going down to the page. I haven't sorted out which one goes on which page.
Uh-huh.
You jump around.
Because this is something, you know, the actual real impact is not going to work on radio. You're going to have to see the pictures because this is the data, this is the evidence from this crime scene. And, you know, we still need to figure it out. I mean, like, this is, I think that's a pretty good analogy. Like, the, you know, there's a magician on the stage. We know it's a gag. We know there's, the whole thing is meant to fool us. And we're trying to figure out exactly how it was done, and I guess, you know, you start from the back, from the what's we left, the data, the results of what happened. I mean, because, you know, human engineering built these buildings and these vehicles, and now they're gone, and human engineering took them apart. Because, I mean, you know, just focusing on how the official story is rather stupid at this point. It's 6 years, you know, because, but we know that's false. And, you know, other than somehow getting control of our political process and getting people in government that will actually be representative of the people. That's a whole other issue, but I think it is important, you know, that we do look at this data. I mean, and what's more important, it's amazing, you know, the people that would believe the official line, it's like, why? You know, why is it so important to you to not look at the data that is, you know, it's there available. It's not something that's, you know, you can't see it. It's still there. These pictures, a lot of pictures were taken, a lot of video, these important interviews that are still out there that could be seen.
This was the new Hiroshima. I'd like to read a part of a post that a really observant person posted on a forum.
Sure.
We stand at the beginning of the new age. Our government has in its possession a method of disrupting the molecular basis of matter, and its first impulse was to weaponize it. It is so hard to understand, like splitting atoms to create destruction was hard to understand in 1945. Of course, this new invention came online when the United States ruled supreme. A weapon system of vast new power comes online and we don't have an enemy worthy of it. So, naturally, we use it on ourselves, wag the dog.
Yes, I think that's,
Well, and the new Nagasaki, which came, Nagasaki was 3 days after Hiroshima. The new Nagasaki equivalent was the anthrax. It's like any politician who wasn't dying of the Patriot Act was anthrax.
Yeah, we found that was the most weaponized form, came before Diedrich, which is just like 45 minutes up the road from here.
So they know about 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
But they feel that they can't do anything about it.
Sure.
I believe that's my assessment.
Mm-hmm.
But, this is our country. This is our world. We can't wait for someone else to fix it.
Also,
what we believe in. Also,
you think that, I think one time we talked, you said there might have been some interesting corollaries with the bridge collapse in Minnesota. Is that possible? Or?
Yeah, you first think about it, and you have a bridge with, you know, X number of supports, and every single support giving way at the same time, so that when the sections came down, they still had the vehicle sitting on them.
Uh-huh.
Didn't roll off, even. If there's something that's going to fail because of natural degradation, you're not going to have every single support giving way at the exact same moment.
Uh-huh. Well,
it's puzzling.
Yeah. Well, like a building, I have seen some video of some actual building failures, and they do, they'll fall over. There'll be an asymmetrical weakening or something, and then it just literally falls over.
Or an earthquake or something like that, buildings, you know, drop over here and there, or something is, erodes away here and there, and something's going to fail. But buildings are built with a whole lot of redundancy. So you have to take out every support at the exact same moment. Like the bridge. Bridges are built to take, the unforeseen, too many on the bridge kind of deal.
Exactly.
10 times.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of interesting, too. They had dirt on the bridge.
Okay.
Yeah, truck some dirt. What would that be for? So, if there's a lot of similarities with 9/11, intelligent vehicles, you know what I mean? You can have the checklist. Were they trying to show us that all these symptoms we've seen at the WTC are normal? That was, what was going on? But definitely, what happened with that Minneapolis bridge cannot be explained rationally with a natural event.
Well, okay. Well, a lot of stuff to look at. Hopefully, I pulled off something here with my one phone in one hand, and we did have a little bit of internet. But from your site is drjudywood.com. And thank you for joining us, I guess. Hopefully, maybe at some point, we'll try to iron out these things, or I need to set up some better thing where I can record and have a nice internet connection with me. But, all right, Dr. Judy, Dr. Wood, anything in closing you'd like to say for us, or anywhere else to look? Or?
We all need to think for ourselves.
Exactly. Here's Einstein's quote. I like that. The important thing is to not stop questioning.
Yes. Very well said. Well said.
Yes, it's a science, I guess. All right, ma'am. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
Okay. Bye. Oh, boy. Well, I never tried that before. I guess it works. Lost internet, lost everything. And, yeah, I need to get a whole lot more technology on my ongoing to make this something that it should be. But what do you think, molecular association? WSDC, Shepherdstown.